Do you remember it? With a question mark, end quotes, that special place. You may not have known it then, but you loved it. Maybe you worshipped it. Maybe it was the fresh scent of a mowed lawn, or just laying down in tall grass, wandering. I used to call them ordinary, but special places. As a child, I first noticed them from the back seat of a car, passing by a green meadow, or a yellow field with a broken gray barn. The sound of a faraway engine from an old airplane. Time passed. A contemplative spirit entered my life. The special places became early morning stillness in the presence of a flickering candle. Those special places became spiritual places. I no longer just looked at the western sunset. I now look behind me as the rays splash on the eastern palette. I then began walking distant pilgrimages, vistas. Mossy green tree trunks and ancient cultures became the spiritual places, and my spiritual places transitioned to sacred places.
That was the voice of Bob Shea, one of our guests today, in the new season of the Running Anthropologist podcast with our first episode, Earth Day, Earth Year. We're going to be talking about sustainability and about our purpose, our motivation, connecting with nature around us, with Mother Earth, with creation, all the gifts that we have from it. To that end, we have some of our favorites back in the Running Anthropologist, including, of course, Bob Shea, who talks about recovery, walking through nature on multi-day pilgrimages, what pilgrimage means to the human spirit, and movement, a little bit about movement therapy, seeking our own purpose and motivation. Of course, Michael Wardian back with us talking about his healing journey during the pandemic year and giving us some sound advice, I think, for anyone who's had some suffering and setbacks. Really, really cool interview with Mike Wardian, and he tells us all about it. And finally, towards the end, Peter Maximow, who's founded a plogging movement in the Pacific Northwest. If you haven't heard of plogging, it's basically a running club for mindfulness and picking up trash and recycling, returning nature to, you know, only leave footprints and being grateful for the natural world as we experience it, giving back a little bit as we take from it. So that balance of give and take, and talks about some of our interconnectivity and some of the cool things that he has going on as a mountain runner. No doubt familiar to many of you. Well, without further ado, we welcome you again to the new season. We're hoping to be here for people who are just seeking a little bit of inspiration, maybe a way to connect more with the body, mind, spirit aspects of running, to learn about running as therapy, and to work together to make our community better. Running and walk running, a unique breed, one where we're always learning and growing from each other, and I can't tell you enough how grateful I am to be a part of that journey with you and to celebrate this Earth Day. Hopefully that'll turn into this Earth Year as we form deeper connections with the world around us and just grateful for life after such a difficult year. Thank you. Let's get started. I'm Mark Lane Holbert, and this is The Running Anthropologist, episode 55. And joining us today is Peter Maximow, who is super, super grateful to have you on the program. He's a U.S. Silver medalist on the U.S. long-distance mountain running championships, and has been a really active member of the American Trail Running Association. Done a lot of awesome things in trail running and in the mountains. Thanks for joining us, Peter.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So the reason as you know, the main reason I wanted to introduce you to others is because of the impact that you've had on not all of your long distance running accolades, which are also incredible, but on the world of plogging, which is this really cool environmental and sustainable movement that I, yeah, why don't you tell us about it? That'd be even better.
Yeah, so plogging is essentially just picking up trash while you're out on a run or a walk, or so it just incorporates the two, the exercise aspect as well as the helping the earth aspect. And plogga up comes from Swedish term, which was coined by a Swede just recently, in the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years. And so now we have a term for picking up trash while you're out on a run.
That's awesome. It's like, as far as I understand it, it's kind of like a glorified social club and running kind of movement. Is that a good description?
Yeah, it has become that, I think, because I mean I plog technically every day. I don't sort of come back after I'm out exercising without a piece of trash that I've found. And it's a good thing when I can't find anything, because that means the my undertakings are working. But it is more fun to do it with people, because you sort of challenge yourself, and people feed off each other no matter what you're doing. If you're doing something negative, you tend to get people to do the negative things with you. If you're doing something positive, you're also getting them excited to do it.
Huh. Yeah, that's
I think it
interesting.
is important if someone sees you pick up a piece of trash. For example, I remember being out with a friend and I picked up a piece of trash. We were on a hike or a run, and they said, "Oh, that's cool." And then they picked up a piece of trash and they're like, "I've never done that. I mean, I've picked up trash, but not while running." So it's contagious to a point too.
Yeah. I think that's a really cool aspect of, so the anything that we do, especially in distance running, it seems like is contagious, like that kind of encouraging atmosphere, cheering each other on, being each other's support team. And it can be competitive, but I've always found it's competitive in such a way that it's like, I'm hoping that you do your best. And even if that means beating me, I don't care, right?
Right, right.
And that's.
Yeah, I mean, no one likes to lose per se, but if you lose to a more talented person, then yeah, you should be proud of that. Whatever talent that may be, or someone who picks up more trash, they pick up more trash than you do, and yeah, that's a good reason to lose. And then actually, there's a funny story I'll interject here, because I just saw it posted recently. Killian Jornet is encouraging a plogging day on Earth Day, and it was, and I believe you brought up this article that I wrote for trailrunner.com, American Trail Running Association. On my 40th birthday, I attempted to pick up 40 pounds of trash, recyclables,
The big
and
task, yeah.
yeah, and I did that. I ended up picking up over 50 pounds, I believe.
Wow.
I found a car bumper, so that added a good amount of weight. But in my social media posts, I think Facebook and Instagram, I sort of called out, not really called out, just sort of said some of my friends, I have some friends in England, I have some friends in Italy, friends in Norway, Japan, all over the world. And I said it'd be great for someone like Killian to pick up some trash when he's up skiing in the Alps of Norway, or for Ricky Gates to do vlogging. So yeah, I'd like to say I encouraged him 2 years later now to do a little vlogging event, encourage others to do it as well.
Nice. And you're, so just so people get a geographical context, you're in mostly running in the mountains of Vermont, right?
Well, I was in Colorado, so
I've been from Colorado, California to Vermont in the last 2 years. It's been a hectic couple of years, but yeah, my family's in California, my wife's family's in Vermont, and I lived in Colorado. Technically live in Colorado, yeah.
So you've really seen the gamut, at least across the U.S., in the different mountain environments. Which ones, thinking a little bit more about sustainability, which ones do you think have a more critical, like, we really need to preserve these public lands? It's more of a critical problem with the preservation.
Well, I mean, Colorado, you get into some really remote mountain trails that you don't see many people out there. That's sort of a, you need to be really committed to get out there. And luckily, you don't find much trash or people littering out that far. But I would say, and this is a good and bad thing because people are getting on the trails. For example, I'm from Whittier, California. It's a just suburb of Los Angeles, and I was there for most of the year last year. And there's a lot more people on the trails, mainly due to the pandemic because they weren't working, so they were at home, and it's nice for them to get out and exercise. But there's also where there's an influx of people who may not be knowledgeable, you know, trail etiquette, pack in your trash, you pack out your trash. There is, I noticed a lot more trash in those areas, the places that were accessible. You know, there's a trailhead, or there's trash cans at the trailhead, and they just were uneducated about it. A lot of masks, a lot of, during the beginning of the pandemic, started with a lot of latex gloves. Actually, on my Strava, I was counting how many gloves and how many masks I saw on every run. And it started really high with the gloves at the beginning, and then the gloves started coming down and balancing with the masks, the number of them. And then all of a sudden the masks started taking off because, as we know, it evolved with what the CDC and what scientists were saying. Like, we just didn't know initially. So everyone was wearing gloves, and then, oh yeah, it's respiratory, so we should probably cover our mouths. And then that changed.
The big thing is that I guess with trail culture in general is that interconnectivity where we kind of feel like, yeah, I'm responsible to this area and to the other walkers and runners and hikers that are going to be taking part on this trail too. I think it's cool that you really reframe that sustainability into something kind of fun and accessible. What are some of the big picture things in terms of sustainability that I know you've worked in this area for a long time, but outside of plogging, what are some things that the community that uses the trails and other runners should be thinking about?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this recently, and you know, picking up plogging every day, it's a great thing to do, but I guess I'm questioning why the trash is there in the first place. Why we have so many, and mostly I would say 60, 70% of what I find is aluminum cans. And then the other 30 to 40 is plastic bottles. And so, you know, obviously other things thrown in there, but I don't know, and this goes beyond just running. This is like, why are we allowing this stuff to be sold? Like, water, buying a water in a plastic bottle to me is just the most useless thing, because water comes out of a tap. And then you're paying for it. It's mind-boggling. So I think we just need these companies to stop producing that stuff. Then it won't end up on the side of the road. Then, you know, our plogging efforts will go down, which I'm fine with. But as and I think runners get that. I think that's why you're seeing a bigger push with, you know, reusable bottles, or carrying a vest and wearing a vest in a race rather than getting cups, especially ultra running. Mm-hmm. You know, marathoning hasn't got to that point because, you know, you see these big mainstream road marathons and how many millions of cups are laying on the road afterward. But I digress. I mean, I think trail runners, since they're in the trails, they're seeing this stuff on the trails, littering the trails, and like, yeah, what can we do to stop that? Well, if they look introspectively, I can think, okay, maybe I will stop using those things.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think you're right. Taking that big picture step back and saying, you know, maybe you're right, the cups are just one event, but then the day-to-day consumption of like plastic water bottles and other things like that that are not recycled is the bigger, you know, the more damaging side of things.
Yeah, and I think now there's a lot of new information on recycling, and there's not as much recycling done as we think is being done. And I just heard a piece on, I believe it was NPR, about the plastic bags that have the recycling symbol, or anything that has a recycling symbol, styrofoam containers. These companies are just putting it on there to make you feel good about yourself, that you're doing something. Then they put in a recycling bin, they ship it off. You know, if China doesn't want it, then they just dump it or burn it. And it's like, yeah, we're being tricked into thinking we're doing something good, which is, I don't know if that's worse than, you know, just throwing it on the side of the road. It's just ignorance. Like if you don't know that your recycling is not being recycled.
Yeah. And that goes down to local laws. And for example, in Florida, we don't have the deposit on cans and bottles. So the vast, vast majority of them are not recycled. And just goes down to prioritizing that thing has value. You know, it shouldn't just be tossed out. And we definitely...
Yeah, they should charge 50 cents for a container. I bet you a lot more people will bring them back.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. When you were doing your research about, you know, kind of preserving public lands and the trust that we put into public land, do you find that public lands are threatened more and more by private purchasing and development, or is there kind of a hiatus of that right now?
Yeah, I think my answer now would have been different than a year ago, because obviously it comes down to our leaders, and we had a leader that didn't care about outdoor spaces. Obviously selling off something like Bears Ears or Grand Escalante Staircase to oil companies to drill. Like, yeah, that's really unfortunate. So I think, and thankfully, we vote on these people, and if we don't agree with what they're doing, we can vote them out, which is what happened. And yeah, I think that comes from a higher level. I do see that when these companies have regulations and are not allowed to do things, because, you know, with money, you can keep pushing something until you get your way. That's you can do anything, which is unfortunate. But I do see public companies sort of pushing to get their way. You know, and that comes down to money.
Right. You got to be careful who we're supporting with our dollars and where we spend them, because that has power, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so knowledge is the first piece of that. Knowing that you're buying from a company that maybe just pushes out these plastic bottles and with water in them, like, you know, I don't know what the solution is. I don't agree with buying water in the first place, you know, maybe more water fountains.
Yeah. And to that end, Peter, I was going to ask you if you have any good websites or pointers to people that are like, you know what, I'd like to learn more about this. I'd like to learn about companies that are sustainable, you know, in the running world or outside of the running world. Where would be a good place to start?
Well, I'm really into beer. craft beer connoisseur, I'd like to say. And so I just recently saw it yesterday. There's do you know New Belgium Brewing Company
Yes, yep.
out of Fort Collins,
Yes.
Colorado? They were purchased, sold by a big conglomerate, Kirin, which is a Japanese company, and then a subsidiary of them purchased New Belgium. So, usually when you big corporations buying little mom and pop or local places, it's I don't look on it too kindly, but New Belgium is doing a push, and they're actually calling out big corporations to change their environmental outlooks. Like, so they made this beer, and I don't have it offhand, but they made this beer with ingredients that, if all of our like hops are killed off from climate change, or all of our grains. So they were using like dandelions, and I don't know, they called something similar to the apocalypse beer, or
Okay, all
like,
right.
this is what our beer could taste like, or could look like if we don't change our thinking.
Sure.
And so it's a good example of it making you think like real world, or what could happen, not just like, oh, in 30 years, in 50 years, we may not, we may lose 2% of, our green spaces. Like, yeah, that people can't conceptualize that.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm just that made me think of that. And breweries do use a whole bunch of water, in the brewing process, not just in the beer, but just like the cooling. And then, so they potentially do dump a lot of water, and they don't have to. Like, they can reuse that water, have a cooling system where they reuse the same water that they heated, they used to heat a certain tank. Their grains, they can go to a farm to be eaten by cows rather than just dumped in a trash can. And that creates more landfill issues. So, that's obviously outside of the running, but runners are into beer.
I think that's a great example. And similar to plogging, it's like a microcosm, a way that you can make yourself more aware of those daily actions and kind of make it part of the culture, and then you'll make better choices just practicing that and taking time to learn about it. So I appreciate that. I'll post a link about that, and I'll post a link to like an environmentally like check the company kind of environmental conscious thing as well, so people can follow up and do a little more research on their own.
Yeah, and in the running realm, I mean, I'll speak directly to the running industry. There's some great companies that are doing things like Adidas. They're doing this Parley, which is recycled plastics from the ocean, and they're
Okay.
making them into the clothing and shoes. Patagonia, they encourage refurbishment of, like, say, a down jacket rather than buying a new one, which is not really what a company wants to do, because that hurts their bottom line. And then I guess I'll plug my sponsor, Innovate. They've put out the first shoe with graphene-infused foam. So graphene, I don't know if you're familiar with graphene, but it's one of the lightest and strongest materials on the planet, stronger than steel, and you can have like a molecule thick of it, a sheet of it that's a molecule thick. They're using it in bulletproof vests, they're using it in water filtration systems, they're using it in tires, and so Innovate is the first company to use it in rubber, the rubber outsole in the shoe, and then now the foam. They just released the first shoe with graphene in the foam. So
That's
I
really
guess what I'm
interesting.
saying there is that it extends a life. You can have a shoe for two or three, four times the amount of time that you'd have a pair, and I'd like to think people don't throw them away, but let's be realistic. I've seen lots of people just dump shoes in the trash can.
Yeah,
So
that's
using less
important.
material in the long run.
Yeah, the longer wear, which, like you said, is not always in the interest of a company, but the longer wear is the better. And I mean, I'm not doing any promotion whatsoever, but I have had a pair of Rocklite 275s that I've been running in for several years now, and they still feel like new. They still held up really well, so
Yeah,
I vouch for
that's
that.
cool. Yeah, so and again, it's I should plug my sponsors, but there's a lot of great companies out there that are doing similar have similar objectives to like recycling, upcycling, reduction, not using dyes in inks and clothing and to color shoes, because you just like brewing, you just need a lot more water. And that just wasted things that people don't think about.
It's the little things that really those changes that have a big impact, and the little things like plogging that make us stop and think about our contribution and what we're doing in the world. So I appreciate you and your leadership, Peter, your writing and your movement of plogging in the U.S. I'm a beneficiary, and I'm really grateful for all your great running and representation in Team USA. I think you're doing great things out there, so thank you.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate that. I'll keep doing it.
I wish you a happy Earth Day tomorrow.
Yes, you as well.
Any big And Mike Wardian, a favorite and regular on the podcast, thank you so much for joining us for our Earth Day edition.
Oh, man, thanks for having me.
For sure. So grateful to that you keep sharing, what's going on and keeping us updated on all the cool running ventures out there. I know that you've had a crazy year and one with a lot of cross training and healing. So I'm going to ask you about that. But before I do, I want to get to the main topic, which is our Earth Day 5K, which will be my second year running. And thanks for sharing about it. What can you tell us? What is it like, and what's the goal of the Earth Day 5K?
It's awesome, yeah. So it's with a group called or a restaurant based in Washington, D.C. called Little Sesame, and it's just an opportunity to try to get people to get outside and celebrate running and fitness, but just really to appreciate the earth. And so it's like completely free. You don't have to pay anything. You can just go to Little Sesame. Or it's actually eatlittlesesame, .com. And, I don't know if you want to put it in the show notes or something,
For sure.
and you can sign up, and then you can just, print your bib at home and just, go out and run. And it's not timed or anything like that. It's just kind of a celebration of, running and earth. And so yeah, it's should be pretty awesome. It's April 22nd, and it starts at 9 a.m. But really, you can do it anytime, So if you're working or you have school or whatever, just anytime on the 22nd. And it's just a chance to be out there and enjoy the good weather, hopefully, in the DC area. But it's something that people can do all around the world. So wherever you are, you can take advantage of it, and that's what's, great about these kind of virtual events.
Yeah, and so like I said, this will be my second year doing it. And last year, I signed up and I contributed because for every mile you run and so much you contribute, Casey's Trees are planting trees to kind of bring about the healing of the world as we bring about health on Earth Day. I thought that was such a cool idea. And it's local, but people run it from all over, which is really cool. As you know, I can't be in the DC area all the time, so it's neat to be able to run, with you guys and to take part in that. So let's tie in. I hear your dog in the background there waiting to go for
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like one of my dogs opened the door and the other one was barking. So sorry
a
about that, everyone.
No problem. I know that you just ran another race with your dog. How did that go?
That was awesome. was actually it was a race for him, and I was it was what's called a field trial. So our 9-month-old puppy Bash competed in his first field trial, and it's basically just a for the category he was in. It was called Open Puppy, and it's basically they're just looking to see if they would be good working gun dogs, basically, and bird dogs. And so it was cool. Like, usually people do it on horseback, and I don't have a horse, and so you know, when we signed up, they're like, are you bringing a horse? And I was like, no. And they're like, well, if you're going to walk, you need to be able to do 6 miles an hour. And I was like, okay, I can do that. And so that's about 10 minutes per mile. I was like, yeah, that's no problem. And so actually when he went off and his, they call it each brace. And so it's like each little section. Then he went by himself, and we just start, like, I was like, hey, I asked the judges, like, hey, can I just run with him, you know, rather than walk, since I don't have a horse? And they're like, sure. And we actually ended up dropping the horses. So it was pretty funny that, you know, we were able to, you know, take off, and, you know, the judges are on horseback, so they can see him the whole time. And I was able to kind of keep up with him for most of the run. And so we got a chance to kind of explore the fields of this farm that we were at. And it was great. And he was doing all his, all the things that you'd want to see a dog. He's a Vizsla, and they're bird dogs. And so, like, the chance to get him see himself in his element was a real treat and something I won't forget.
That's awesome. I'll definitely post a few photos of your dog too, and on the website, so people can check that out.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
It's so cool that, I mean, it's Earth Day here, this edition of the episode, and, you know, obviously all beings and fostering our connection with our pets and with nature and wildlife. That fits right in. So I'm super happy you mentioned that. I also wanted to ask you about, you know, we're talking about on Earth Day, the healing of the world and kind of our responsibility in doing so, and looking for ways that we can kind of do that as runners and trail runners. You know, what's been your experience this past year as you healed from an injury and kind of came back? Have you had more time in nature, and how's that kind of paralleled for you?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I got hurt, at kind of the end of October of 2020. So I had to take some time off from running and really work on physical therapy and, trying to get healthy from, a bit of an injury to my back. And so, I definitely had time to reexamine kind of what's important to me and to refocus and, to try to get strong to avoid injury in the future. And it's been a really interesting progression from, you know, not really being able to walk around the block to being able to do some, you know, runs, and then being able to get back to, you know, fitness type stuff I like to do, like kind of cross training, weightlifting, CrossFit-y type stuff. And then even now, starting to work with my personal trainer again, a guy named Jesse Fuller, and it's kind of opened up the amount that I've been able to do. And I actually just signed up for a 100-miler, and it's going to actually take place this Saturday. So I'm really excited. Like, I've done some longer runs. I think my longest run, you know, since October at one time has been about 45 miles. I had a big weekend a couple of weeks ago where I did like a 40-mile run on Thursday and then a 45-mile run on Saturday. So, you know, I've had some good longer efforts, but, you know, I haven't kind of stacked them together in the 100-miler yet. So it'll be fun to kind of see what my body is up for. And, you know, I have no expectations other than, you know, it'd be fun to try to get to the finish line.
That's awesome. So as part of your Earth Week dedication here, where will that run be taking place, Mike?
That's actually it's called the CNO Canal 100 Miler. So it's
Okay.
been on my list for a long time, and it always just kind of falls, if not on the same weekend as the Boston Marathon, the same weekend as the Big Sur Marathon, when usually both of those are kind of staples to my spring. And so this year, both of those races have been postponed. So I'm hoping to run, those races when they happen. But the CNO Canal 100 Miler is still happening, which I was surprised to find out. So I just was able to snag a spot, and so I'm going to try to get to do it, since it's really interesting and cool to me, because I still have the fastest known time. So it's
Oh,
for
wow.
the entire CNO Canal. So that's like 300 kilometers, like 184 miles. So it'll be fun to run a 100 miler on part of that trail.
Yeah, the CNO isn't too far from where you are, right?
No, it's actually like one of the places that I do the most training.
Okay. Yeah, I've ran it very sporadically. Definitely not 100 miles. Like 5 or 10 miles. It's a beautiful canal, and I think a lot of people, it's like a hidden gem, you know?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's such a resource for people in the area, and yeah, I love it.
Cool. Well, Mike, I'm really grateful that you took time to join us and to talk a little bit about your own healing. For those of us that are either trying to avoid injury or seeking to come back from an injury, do you have any nuggets, words of wisdom that can kind of keep us going?
I mean, I think there's a lot of things that I learned. I mean, I think every day you're making progress, so you're getting further away from the injury. Once you be your own advocate, I think that was really important to me, to like try to find a way to continue to figure out what was going on. Like, the first diagnosis I had wasn't correct. I thought I had a piriformis issue. That's kind of what I was thinking was wrong, and it really wasn't that. And then I got with my friends at MedStar Health, and they actually figured out exactly what was happening. And so, like, getting in the hands of people that know athletes, and getting to people that can really take care of you in the right way, and then you can get the help that you need, and then don't be afraid to ask for help. I think that was really important. And continue to challenge yourself. So, like, I really didn't ever stop training. I just kind of had to change what I was doing and then build myself back up. And I've tried to take it pretty slow and gingerly, and but each week I'm, setting new goals and challenges for myself. And so that's, I think, for me, the best thing was, just learning that, it is okay to, seek out help and to get it. And then, once you, are on the right track, just kind of try to keep that progress going. And so if you can do all those things, like, you'd be surprised at, how quickly your body will be able to heal, and then, get back to doing what you love to do.
That's awesome, Mike. Thank you so much. That means a lot. That self-efficacy and that progress that make day by day and build on each other. That's
Yeah, exactly. It's cool, man. And it's really, and don't be afraid to lean on your community, man. I think, pretty open with sharing it with people, and everyone was really supportive. So I think, the chance to, to help other people with what you're going through, I think is really powerful.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can scarcely think of someone who's more community connected than you, and open with sharing about what they're going through. So I really appreciate that, and I'm sure a lot of other people did too, as you were healing and going through what you went through. So thanks for doing that, Mike.
Oh yeah, no problem, man. And I hope everyone's safe and healthy on your end, and look forward to talking to you guys again soon.
Thank you. Enjoy that Earth Day 5K. Getting back to the trails, Mike Wardian, who probably knows the trails just about better than anyone, and he'll be back out there running with us on Earth Day. Please join us for the Earth Day 5K, and we'll talk to you next time, Mike.
All right, man. Sounds good. Yeah, hope to see you guys out there. All right. Bye.
Happy running. Bye.
And Bob Shea, welcome back to the Running Anthropologist for our Earth Day edition. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, so glad to be with you and your listeners, Mark.
Oh, man, we're following you on a journey here over the past few years. And there's something really cool that's, I think, been happening recently. First of all, what's your Earth Day plan? What kind of things? I know you're really connected to nature around you, and you do a lot of stuff. What's your plan for the day?
Well, down here in Naples, Florida, it's raining, but my plan is to be with you on your run. You're going to be doing a run tomorrow morning. Is that correct?
That's right, an Earth Day 5K. Yep.
There we go. Well, that's my plan in the morning, and then I'm going to take a nice walk in the woods. I hope it's going to be raining.
All right. Very good.
Yeah.
So some running in the rain. That sounds great. What I wanted to take time to ask you about today is, you know, this past year we've been on the process, this kind of healing our planet as human beings are healing from this coronavirus pandemic. And it's kind of, I think, given a lot of people a means to reconnect with nature around them, you know, more time to get out and walk and run. What has that been like for you? I know you work with a lot of people, you hear from a lot of people. What's your perspective on that?
Well, my perspective is that, you know, it takes something that immense in our lives to move us in directions that we would never normally go, but we have to reset our thoughts. It's kind of like the local therapy. We have to reset our intentions and go with whatever we're able to go with. And I think, you know, that compensation that America and the world has had to develop is an amazing thing. We've got a lot of things that we won't even know the results, the positive results of, you know, the technology and, you know, the goodness that people were sharing, but we won't even know for years. But for myself, I never let it stop me. I'd be running down Route 41 in Bonita Springs, which is normally a very busy highway, and I'd run 5 miles. I wouldn't even see one car. It was very, very bizarre. It's like a science fiction movie. But I tried not to let it interrupt my life. I stayed distant. I followed the parameters that they were telling me, the guidelines, but I didn't allow it to stop my life.
Personally. Yeah. Life never stops, even when it's more restricted. It just takes on a different form, I guess. And obviously we have lost people. There is some healing going on there as well.
Very sad.
I know you're a nurse, you've worked in the ER, you currently work with a lot of, detox folks in recovery. What is that like for you? What do you see in the recovery community in particular?
Oh, the recovery community, very interesting question. Initially, nobody went to meetings. There were just a few of us that would go to meetings, outdoor meetings. None of them were indoors, and we all spaced apart. But we were meeting in places like behind strip malls. We called ourselves a dumpster meeting because there were dumpsters and pallets, and there were amazing, you know, vultures would be sitting there, and there we are helping each other as a band of people in sober or addiction recovery, banding together and refusing to because this we knew that people were going to be going out, and that means going out and drinking, and after 20 years of being in recovery, we knew this. So we wanted to make sure that somebody was there when somebody walked in, you know, to a meeting.
Bob, let me ask you, so one of the things I wanted to get to is this project that you've kind of masterminded, that you've imagined and had time for, probably as a result of the pandemic, which is the Recovery Camino. And I'm so excited to be a part of that and contribute however I can. Why start that, or what is it about? What's the idea behind Recovery Camino?
Well, the genesis was I was with a friend of mine who's a Buddhist monk, and he'd been on many Caminos, which means the way, which is a pilgrimage. And he'd been all through, you know, many continents doing these Caminos. And we started talking about Caminos, and then I started mentioning recovery. And then all of a sudden it came out Recovery Camino, and it was like the light went on. We can help people who are in most any kind of recovery if they're stable. And we could meet them or take them to another country when it opens up, and we could help walk them through this pilgrimage. And we would be using the spiritual principles of AA. And I'll just quickly run over those.
Okay.
For the 12 steps, they each have one word called a principle associated with them. And step one is honesty, and I'm just going to go with it. Hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, brotherly love, discipline, perseverance, spirituality. And then once we've been through that, we've been walked through that by a sponsor, our job on the 12th step, in order to keep it, we have to give it away. So we have to do service. And that is what this is really all about. It's helping other people. And we know what happens. You know what happens in a pilgrimage. It's transforming.
Yeah. I've heard that. So that term recovery, that obviously people hear it, you know, recovery from addictions, but as I understand it, also recovery from traumatic experiences, from codependency, eating disorders, depression, loss. The 12 steps is applicable for a lot of those things, right?
Locally, the Alzheimer's Support Network has a 12-step recovery for caregivers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's very successful for them. And more importantly, it's very successful for the people who go through the steps.
So the process of those principles is basically, and I have a little bit of experience with this, but kind of as you imagine, the movement, the walking or running on pilgrimage, is moving you along the process, like of letting go, or of working towards a purpose or a destination. Or what's the idea behind using those principles as you walk?
So for instance, the first day when, you know, we arrive in this year, when Europe opens, it'll be Porto, Portugal, walking up the coast to Spain. The first day will be, the topic will be honesty. Now, each person will be walking not only with our group and us, but they will be walking with multinationals and multiculturals. It broadens the experience. It lessens their back experience and makes them new people for the future. Now, we will also give them prompts to question themselves about honesty. Step one, I admitted I'm powerless over alcohol or drugs, or that my wife died, or that my husband left me, or that, you know, and that my life has become unmanageable. That could be my emotions. It could be anything. So honesty is step one. So we will prompt them with several questions that they can walk through the day and experience such rich culture. And while they're walking through this culture and talking with these people, they'll be contemplating these questions that we give them about honesty in their lives.
That's beautiful.
And then at the end of the day, we all meet, and if people want to talk about it, we talk about, well, where did we go with this? What did we experience with it? Were we changed that day?
That's beautiful. I think there's a lot of, yeah, and obviously they're interacting with other pilgrims, but there's also, there's also guides with them along the way, kind of facilitating and fostering, going through the same experience that they are. I love it. What is the, so this idea of moving towards something, that's a big part of pilgrimage, right?
Yes.
What is that? So like, what is that purpose or that destination? Is that really the important part, or, what role does that play in a recovery Camino?
Well, for many people, and that's a really great question, Mark, for many people, it's like Santiago de Compostela. Got to get to Santiago, got Santiago, Santiago, Santiago. And they don't allow themselves to get lost. They don't, if they go down a wrong road, they get a little upset about it. If they, you know, the whole point is, it's not just the people that we walk with. It's the creatures that come up to us, the horse that comes up to us. It's the animals that we see. It's the locals that we talk with. It's the food that we experience, the local food. The whole thing is about the change at the moment, because each moment we are shedding skin. Each moment we are shedding something, and each moment we're gathering. So it's all about, you know, whether I want to change or I came on a pilgrimage to change or not. Some people go to find things. Some people go on pilgrimages to lose things. The point is that we're changing every moment that we're on the pilgrimage, and hopefully we'll disrobe all of those opinions and nasty thoughts and concrete beliefs that we held in the past, and become new people with fresh thoughts and fresh ideas.
Awesome. That answered the question great. It's just like breathing, just like giving back, give and take with the earth, you know, as you walk through it. That's the daily rhythm in the moment. I love that.
It's change with our environment, and it's constantly happening. But when we're on a pilgrimage, we're able to do it much more intimately. And that's the beautiful thing. You know, you're eating local meats, and you're grabbing meats and food and from different places that you go. And then you meet people and you say, well, do you have bread? Yeah, I have bread. I have tomatoes. Well, let's have lunch. And you sit down in a field somewhere and you have lunch.
That's awesome. So
Mark, so I have a question for you. And you know, you volunteered as a guide on the Recovery Camino's first trip through Portugal. By the way, eventually we'll do North Spain and then Italy. That's our plans. But you volunteered as a guide, and as a guide in the Recovery Camino, and a person who also is very and studies logotherapy and running, walking therapy as a healing. What does it mean to you about the walking the Camino and the future, you know, living in the working with the future now?
Well, I, much like you see it, Bob, I think that from a movement, a purpose, or a motivation perspective. Hold on one sec.
So Mark, and thank you for volunteering. You volunteered as a guide on this first trip through Portugal on the Recovery Camino. And by the way, hopefully we'll be moving towards North Spain and then Italy, the St. Francis of Assisi Trail. But for you, how would you answer a question if I asked you about moving forward? As a person that studies logotherapy and is intimately involved with running and walking as a healing modality for individuals seeking answers.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question, Bob. Thanks for turning it around. I think that moving towards one's purpose, what's meaningful, what's of value to you, is really important in life in general. And the pilgrimage is a good parallel, a good way to practice that. And really, logotherapy is all about kind of finding the value in our struggles, our suffering. Everything in life that we've been through, you know, is kind of what life is calling us to do and to be, to use that to benefit others, to reach what is our higher purpose. And I think that goes right along with recovery on this type of pilgrimage experience. And I couldn't be happier to join you and to join this effort. I'm excited about it. The other thing is, you know, like you said, the motivation of walking together with someone. It's a lot different talking with, you know, someone who's a therapist or a counselor or a sobriety coach or just a fellow person who's listening to you while you're moving towards something together than, you know, just interrupting your day and sitting across from someone on a couch. That's that 1 hour a week doesn't allow that transformation that I think is really powerful. So that's what I would kind of how I would connect those things.
And I agree. And you know, they say that healing is an action. You know, it's an action. I could sit on the couch all day, but until I'm ready to make a move, you know, and the pilgrimage, you know, so we have a start when we were born and a finish when we die, and it's a pilgrimage all the way in between. What am I going to do each minute of every day on that pilgrimage? And when I looked at a map of North Spain along the Sea of Biscayne, and I mapped out my each day, how far I went, I look at that, and I start in France, and I end up in Northwest Spain, and I look at that, and I go, that's a lifetime. That represents a lifetime, that pilgrimage, because I experienced most everything that I will in a lifetime. There were very difficult times in North Spain because of the rugged terrain for some of it. And the glee and the joy and the spirit, but mostly traveling through, contemplating, it was about spirit. It was beautiful.
Well, Bob, you are a tremendously gifted. You're a music therapist. You work with a lot of people near the end of their lives, and you also work with a lot of people that are just, you know, getting started in recovery. You're a writer. I love reading things that you write. Would you mind sharing a song or a poem or whatever you would like to share with us?
You know, I'd love to. You know, I'm a distance runner, as you know, and sometimes I take short ones, sometimes I take long ones. Rain or shine, it doesn't matter. I love being out there. So one day I kept passing this log in a beautiful, beautiful shaded forest in Bonita Springs. And this came to me, and it was almost like a one-time writing. I think maybe I dusted it off and fixed it a couple times, but not much. And it goes like this. It's called The Sober Pilgrim's Altar.
The altar. Okay.
Yeah, the altar. Yes. Do you remember it? With a question mark. End quotes. That special place. You may not have known it then, but you loved it. Maybe you worshipped it. Maybe it was the fresh scent of a mowed lawn, or just laying down in tall grass, wondering, wandering. I used to call them ordinary, but special places. As a child, I first noticed them from the back seat of a car, passing by a green meadow or a yellow field with a broken gray barn, the sound of a faraway engine from an old airplane. Time passed. A contemplative spirit entered my life. The special places became early morning stillness in the presence of a flickering candle. Those special places became spiritual places. I no longer just looked at the western sunset. I now look behind me as the rays splash on the eastern palette. I then began walking distant pilgrimages. Vistas, mossy green tree trunks, and ancient cultures became the spiritual places. And my spiritual places transitioned to sacred places. As my world grew, my sacred centers grew, but within me. These days, my sacred centers have expanded again. I jog past a fallen log in the thick woods. In time, I noticed it, then focused on it. One day, I sat on it. The next, I prayed on it. A dozen passes later, I knelt before it. My sacred centers had become altars. I was being served, always, and everywhere I roamed. Now I go to the altar when I choose. My altar is fresh-cut grass. It's the yellow field with the broken gray barn and the mossy tree trunk. It's the little things. And it was right in front of me, calling me all along. I just have to step up to it. My altar. Thank you.
Wonderful, Val.
I get emotional reading it now.
Well, thank you so much for that, and for your wisdom, for your healing, for all the work that you do, Nurse Bob Shea. Thank you. We look forward to hearing more from you about Recovery Camino in the future, and I look forward to joining on a pilgrimage, and hope that together on this Earth Day we can unite in healing in the way that that you described in that poem.
Thank you so much, Mark. And by the way, I do have to say the reason why I go on pilgrimages is because you introduced me to them.
Oh, thank you.
So this is how it works. It's how it works. We shed light or we shed darkness, but it's about the light. So thanks. Thank you for calling me.
Thank you, and happy running.
Thanks. I'll see you tomorrow, or I'll be with you tomorrow in spirit running.
All right. Sounds good, Bob. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this episode, starting off our Earth year in a spirit of gratitude and connection. If you would like to connect with Bob Shea and Recovery Camino, you can check out our show notes, recoverycamino.com, or you can link from our blog site that has information on all of our speakers today, as well as all the topics we mentioned about the Earth Day 5K, if you would like to sign up and join us in running tomorrow or any day, but definitely on Earth Day, it's a great opportunity. And I'll have the link there as well at runninganthropologist.com. In the meantime, if you have things that inspire you and you think would be helpful to others and their journey, you can send us a message at Running Anthropologist on Facebook or Instagram. And we hope that you and yours have happy running in nature and the world around you in whatever way that you choose to practice walk running. This summer, if you'd like to join us on a journey of recovery, the Recovery Camino is running a free 8-week training where they go over the concepts of purpose and motivation and working with the 12 principles. So you can register at their site, and I'll be helping out with that training as well. So until next time, again, we wish you and yours happy running, and we can't wait to see you in the next episode. Talk to you soon.